Chapter 20. Dinah visits Lisbeth. At 5 o'clock, Lisbeth came downstairs with a large key in her hand. It was the key of the chamber where her husband lay dead. Throughout the day, except in her occasional outbursts of wailing grief, she had been in incessant movement, performing the initial duties to her dead with the awe and exactitude that belonged to religious rites. She had brought out her little store of bleached linen, which she had for long years kept in reserve for this supreme use. It seemed but yesterday, that time so many midsummers ago, when she had told Thias where this linen lay, that he might be sure, and reach it out for her when she died, for she was the elder of the two. Then there had been the work of cleansing to the strictest purity every object in the sacred chamber, and of removing from it every trace of common daily occupation. The small window, which had hitherto freely let in the frosty moonlight, or the warm summer sunrise on the working man's slumber, must now be darkened with a fair white sheet, for this was the sleep which is as sacred under the bare rafters as in sailed houses. Lisbeth had even mended a long neglected and unnoticeable rent in the checkered bit of bed curtain, for the moments were few and precious now in which she would be able to do the smallest office of respect or love for the still corpse, to which in all her thoughts she attributed some consciousness. Our dead are never dead to us until we have forgotten them. They can be injured by us, they can be wounded, they know all our penitence, all our aching sense, that their place is empty, all the kisses we bestow on the smallest relic of their presence. And the aged peasant woman most of all believes that her dead are conscious. Decent burial was what Lisbeth had been thinking of for herself through years of thrift, with an indistinct expectation that she should know when she was being carried to the churchyard, followed by her husband and her sons. And now she felt as if the greatest work of her life were to be done in seeing that Thias was buried decently before her under the white thorn, where once, in a dream, she had thought she lay in the coffin, yet all the while saw the sunshine above and smelt the white blossoms that were so thick upon the thorn the Sunday she went to be churched after Adam was born. But now she had done everything that could be done today in the chamber of death, had done it all herself, with some aid from her sons in lifting, for she would let no one be fetched to help her from the village, not being fond of female neighbors generally. And her favorite Dolly, the old housekeeper at Mr. Burge's, who had come to condole with her in the morning, as soon as she heard of Thias' death, was too dim-sighted to be of much use. She had locked the door, and now held the key in her hand, as she threw herself wearily into a chair that stood out of its place in the middle of the house floor, where in ordinary times she would never have consented to sit. The kitchen had had none of her attention that day. It was soiled with the tread of muddy shoes, and untidy with clothes and other objects out of place. But what at another time would have been intolerable to Lisbeth's habits of order and cleanliness seemed to her now just what should be. It was right that things should look strange and disordered and wretched. Now the old man had come to his end in that sad way, the kitchen ought not to look as if nothing had happened. Adam, overcome with the agitations and exertions of the day after his night of hard work, had fallen asleep on a bench in the workshop. And Seth was in the back kitchen making a fire of sticks, that he might get the kettle to boil, and persuade his mother to have a cup of tea, an indulgence which she rarely allowed herself. There was no one in the kitchen when Lisbeth entered, and threw herself into the chair. She looked round with blank eyes at the dirt and confusion on which the bright afternoon sun shone dismally. It was all of a piece with the sad confusion of her mind, that confusion which belongs to the first hours of a sudden sorrow, when the poor human soul is like one who has been deposited sleeping among the ruins of a vast city, and wakes up in dreary amazement, not knowing whether it is the growing or the dying day, not knowing why and whence came this illimitable scene of desolation, or why he too finds himself desolate in the midst of it. At another time Lisbeth's first thought would have been, where is Adam? But the sudden death of her husband had restored him in these hours to that first place in her affections which he had held 26 years ago. As he had forgotten his faults as we forget the sorrows of our departed childhood, and thought of nothing but the young husband's kindness and the old man's patience. Her eyes continued to wander blankly until Seth came in, and began to remove some of the scattered things, and clear the small round deal table, that he might set out his mother's tea upon it. "What art going to do?" she said, rather peevishly. "I want thee to have a cup of tea, mother," answered Seth, tenderly. "Tea apostrophe LL do thee good, and I'll put two or three of these things away, and make the house look more comfortable." "Comfortable? How canst talk o' man things comfortable? Let a be, let a be. There's no comfort for me no more," she went on, the tears coming when she began to speak. "Now thy poor feyther's gone, as in washed for and mended, and got spittle for him for 30 year, and him a lays, so pleased why ivory thing I done for him, and used to be so handy, and do the jobs for me when I wore ill, encumbered YTH babby, and made me the posset, and brought it upstairs as proud as could be, and carried the lad as wore as heavy as 2 children for 5 mile and never grumbled, all the way to Worsen Wake. 'Cause I wanted to go and see my sister, as war dead, and gone the very next Christmas as ever come. And him to be drowned in the brook as we passed or the day we were married, and come home together, and he'd made them lots o' shelves for me to put my plates and things on, and showed them me as proud as could be, 'cause he knowed I should be pleased. And he wore to die and me not to know, but to be asleep in I my bed, as if I cared not about it. Eh? And me to live to see that. And us as wore young folks once, and thought we should do rarely when we wore married. Let a be, lad, let a be. I wanna ha no tay. I careena if I never ate nor drink no more. When one end O.T.H. bridge tumbles down, where's T.H.U.'s O.T.H. other standin'? I may's well die, and foller my old man. There's no knowin', but he'll want me." Here Lisbeth broke from words into moans, swaying herself backwards and forwards on her chair. Seth, always timid in his behavior towards his mother, from the sense that he had no influence over her, felt it was useless to attempt to persuade or soothe her till his passion was past. So he contented himself with tending the back kitchen fire and folding up his father's clothes, which had been hanging out to dry since morning, afraid to move about in the room where his mother was, lest he should irritate her further. But after Lisbeth had been rocking herself and moaning for some minutes, she suddenly paused and said aloud to herself, "I'll go and see Arthur Adam, for I canna think where he's gotten. And I want him to go upstairs why me afore it's dark, for the minutes to look at the corpses like the melting snow." Seth overheard this, and coming into the kitchen again, as his mother rose from her chair, he said, "Adam's asleep in the workshop, mother. Thee'dst better not wake him. He was o'erwrought with work and trouble." "Wake him? Who's a going to wake him? I shan't awake him while looking at him. I hadna seen the lad this 2 hour. I'd welly forgot as he'd ever growed up from a babby when's feyther carried him." Adam was seated on a rough bench, his head supported by his arm, which rested from the shoulder to the elbow on the long planing table in the middle of the workshop. It seemed as if he had sat down for a few minutes' rest, and had fallen asleep without slipping from his first attitude of sad, fatigued thought. His face, unwashed since yesterday, looked pallid and clammy. His hair was tossed shaggily about his forehead, and his closed eyes had the sunken look which follows upon watching and sorrow. His brow was knit, and his whole face had an expression of weariness and pain. Jip was evidently uneasy, for he sat on his haunches, resting his nose on his master's stretched-out leg, and dividing the time between licking the hand that hung listlessly down and glancing with a listening air towards the door. The poor dog was hungry and restless, but would not leave his master, and was waiting impatiently for some change in the scene. It was owing to this feeling on Jip's part that, when Lisbeth came into the workshop, and advanced towards Adam as noiselessly as she could, her intention not to awaken him was immediately defeated. for Jip's excitement was too great to find vent in anything short of a sharp bark, and in a moment Adam opened his eyes and saw his mother standing before him. It was not very unlike his dream, for his sleep had been little more than living through again, in a fevered, delirious way, all that had happened since daybreak, and his mother with her fretful grief was present to him through it all. The chief difference between the reality and the vision was that in his dream Eddie was continually coming before him in bodily presence, strangely mingling herself as an actor in scenes with which he had nothing to do. She was even by the willow brook. She made his mother angry by coming into the house, and he met her with her smart clothes quite wet through as he walked in the rain to Treddleston to tell the coroner. But wherever Eddie came, his mother was sure to follow soon, and when he opened his eyes, it was not at all startling to see her standing near him. "Hey, my lad, my lad!" Lisbeth burst out immediately, her wailing impulse returning, for grief in its freshness feels the need of associating its loss and its lament with every change of scene and incident. "Thee'st got nobody now but thy old mother to torment thee and be a burden to thee. Thy poor faither'll ne'er anger thee no more, and thy mother may's well go arter him the sooner the better, for I'm no good to nobody now. One old coat'll do to patch another, but it's good for naught else. Thee'dst like to hae a wife to mend thy clothes and get thy victual better nor thy old mother, and I shall be naught but cumber, a sittin' ith chimney corner." Adam winced and moved uneasily. He dreaded, of all things, to hear his mother speak of Eddie. "But if thy faither had lived, he'd never ha' wanted me to go to make room for another, for he could no more ha' done without me, nor one side o' the scissors can do without th' other. Eh, we should ha' been both flung away together, and then I should na' ha' seen this day, and one buryin' ud ha' done for us both." Here Lisbeth paused, but Adam sat in pained silence. He could not speak otherwise than tenderly to his mother today, but he could not help being irritated by this plaint. It was not possible for poor Lisbeth to know how it affected Adam any more than it is possible for a wounded dog to know how his moans affect the nerves of his master. Like all complaining women, she complained in the expectation of being soothed, and when Adam said nothing, she was only prompted to complain more bitterly. "I know he couldst do better without me, for he couldst go where he likest, and marry them as he likest. But I donna want to say he nay, let he bring home who he would. I'd never open my lips to find fault, for when folks is old, and oh no use, they may think their son's well off to get the bit and the sup, though thane to swallow ill words wit. And if thee'st set thy heart on a lass as'll bring thee naught and waste all, when he might'st ha' them as ud make a man on thee, I'll say naught, now thy faither's dead and drowned, for I'm no better nor an old haft when the blade's gone." Adam, unable to bear this any longer, rose silently from the bench and walked out of the workshop into the kitchen. But Lisbeth followed him. "Thee wouldna go upstairs and see thy faither then? He'd done everything now, and he'd like thee to go and look at him, for he war lay so pleased when he was smiled to him." Adam turned round at once and said, "Yes, mother, let us go upstairs. Come, Seth, let us go together." They went upstairs, and for 5 minutes all was silence. Then the key was turned again, and there was a sound of footsteps on the stairs. But Adam did not come down again. He was too weary and worn out to encounter more of his mother's querulous grief, and he went to rest on his bed. Lisbeth no sooner entered the kitchen and sat down than she threw her apron over her head and began to cry and moan and rock herself as before. Seth thought, "She will be quieter by and by, now we have been upstairs," and he went into the back kitchen again to tend his little fire, hoping that he should presently induce her to have some tea. Lisbeth had been rocking herself in this way for more than 5 minutes, giving a low moan with every forward movement of her body, when she suddenly felt a hand placed gently on hers, and a sweet treble voice said to her, "Dear sister, the Lord has sent me to see if I can be a comfort to you." Lisbeth paused, in a listening attitude, without removing her apron from her face. The voice was strange to her. Could it be her sister's spirit come back to her from the dead after all those years? She trembled and dared not look. Dinah, believing that this pause of wonder was in itself a relief for the sorrowing woman, said no more just yet, but quietly took off her bonnet, and then, motioning silence to Seth, who, on hearing her voice, had come in with a beating heart, laid one hand on the back of Lisbeth's chair and leaned over her, that she might be aware of a friendly presence. Slowly Lisbeth drew down her apron, and timidly she opened her dim dark eyes. She saw nothing at first, but a face, a pure, pale face, with loving gray eyes, and it was quite unknown to her. Her wonder increased. Perhaps it was an angel. But in the same instant Dinah had laid her hand on Lisbeth's again, and the old woman looked down at it. It was a much smaller hand than her own, but it was not white and delicate, for Dinah had never worn a glove in her life, and her hand bore the traces of labor from her childhood upwards. Lisbeth looked earnestly at the hand for a moment, and then, fixing her eyes again on Dinah's face, said, with something of restored courage, but in a tone of surprise, "Why, ye're a working woman." "Yes, I am Dinah Morris, and I work in the cotton mill when I am at home." "Ah," said Lisbeth slowly, still wondering. "He comed in so light, like the shadow on the wall, and spoke I my ear, as I thought he might be a spirit. He have got amist the face o' one as is a sittin' on the grave I Adam's new Bible. I come from the Hall Farm now. You know Mrs. Poyser, she's my aunt, and as he has heard of your great affliction, and is very sorry, and I'm come to see if I can be any help to you in your trouble, for I know your sons Adam and Seth. And I know you have no daughter, and when the clergyman told me how the hand of God was heavy upon you, my heart went out towards you, and I felt a command to come and be to you in the place of a daughter in this grief, if you will let me." "Ah, I know who you are now. You are a Methody, like Seth. He's told me on you," said Lisbeth fretfully, her overpowering sense of pain returning. Now her wonder was gone. "He'll make it out as trouble's a good thing, like he always does. But where's the use o' talking to me a thatin? He canna make the smart less why talking. He'll never make me believe as it's better for me not to ha my old man die in's bed, if he must die, and ha the parson to pray by him, and me to sit by him, and tell him never to mind th ill words I've guyin' him sometimes when I war angered, and to guy him a bit and a sup, as long as a bit and a sup he'd swallow. But eh, to die I the cold water, and as close to him, and never to know, and me a sleep in, as if I never belonged to him no more nor if he'd been a journeyman tramp from nobody knows where." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.